Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Oh, there he is.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown 2016 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Michelle, and welcome everyone to today's teleconference. We're previewing this weekend's three massively important Road to the Kentucky Derby prep races. Those are the Wood Memorial, the Bluegrass Stakes, and the Santa Anita Derby. Each of these grade ones are worth 170 points on the Road to the Kentucky Derby leaderboard, with 100 points to the respective winners. Note that the Wood and the Santa Anita Derby will be part of a two-hour live national broadcast on the NBC Sports Network, and that's from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Now, also note that the last four major Road to the Kentucky Oaks preps for the three-year-old fillies are all this Saturday. Four key stakes in the same division, including two grade ones, all on the same afternoon. That's the Gazelle, the Ashland, the Fantasy, and the Santa Anita Oaks. The last of those, the Santa Anita Oaks, will feature the unbeaten Kentucky Oaks favorite, Songbird. She's just been so sensational and such a story in her own right that we wanted her represented on this call. So later on, we're going to talk to Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith. He rides Songbird as well as Dancing Candy in the Santa Anita Derby. We'll also talk to trainer Chad Brown. He's got three Derby prospects expected to start this weekend, including the likely favorite for the Wood in Chagoff. But first, we're delighted to be joined by trainer Dale Romans, who's going to saddle Brody's Cause and also possibly Cherry Wine in Saturday's Toyota Bluegrass. Just a short while ago, Brody's Cause drew post 6 and was assigned morning line odds of 4-1, while Cherry Wine got post 3 and is 12-1. We also want to mention that last weekend, Dale won the Gulfstream Park Oaks with Go Maggie Go, who's now earned a shot at the Kentucky Oaks, so we'll ask about that too. Dale, it's Jim Mulvihill here. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
You got it. We always appreciate when you're able to come on and share some time with us. First, I just want to clarify the status of Cherry Wine, if you don't mind. You had talked about entering both the Bluegrass and the Wood, entries for which will be taken tomorrow. So is the plan still to enter the Wood tomorrow and then size up the field?
Well, with a good post, I'm not sure that I'll enter, but I will definitely monitor the race and see how many they're getting and which horses are going to run in it.
I see. So it was really more about making sure that you didn't get a bad post in the Bluegrass.
Well, I didn't want to get a bad post, but also, you know, we got such a good post that we might just stay where we are. But there's a good chance that we're going to enter anyway, but I will be monitoring the race to make sure that, you know, it's an important decision. We don't have enough points right now to get in with the fourth place finish in the Rebel. So points are in play, and even though I don't think it's going to take that many this year, but so we'll look, you know, the biggest problem with the Bluegrass is 14 horses with a horse that comes from behind. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. And if it's a shorter field up at Aqueduct, a much shorter field, then we might decide to change.
I see. Very good. And just so we know, when you do enter up in New York, who would you be naming to ride if you were to run up there?
Well, that's another issue. That's another problem. I mean, Junior Alvarado, I think, is available. If he's still available by tomorrow, then he would be the one we'd probably name on.
Very good. All right. Thanks for that info, Dale. Now let's talk about Brody's Cause. As we said, drew the 6-hole for the Bluegrass. Perhaps more importantly, though, there's a lot of speed in that race. It's a full field. A lot of horses on paper look like they'll be wanting the lead. So just tell us how you feel about Brody's Cause on Saturday.
Well, you know, Brody's training like a monster. I just don't know. I can't explain the Tampa race. He just didn't run well. He was training good going into it, but I've never had a horse train good going into a race, run so poorly and come out of the race training better than he did going in. So maybe he's just the type of horse that needs a race. First time out, I thought he would win, and he ran terrible. He ran dead last, and then came back and won 2 in a row and was 3rd in the Breeders' Cup. So hopefully it's just a horse that needs a trip.
And subsequent, since that Tampa race, just working at Gulfstream, have you seen any change? Or, I mean, he was doing good going into that race, but how about the last few weeks since then?
He was doing good going into it, but I swear he looks like he's gotten stronger after the race. Like, like the race did, he was some good, and the work Saturday was as good as any horse could possibly work.
Very good. Well, we're happy to hear that. Dale, let me check with the media and see if they have any questions for you. Michelle, you want to check with our folks on the line?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you have signaled for a question prior to hearing these instructions on today's call, please repeat the process now by pressing star 1 again to ensure our equipment has captured your signal. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for questions. Our first question comes from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale, how's it going, man?
Good, Danny. I knew you would be on here.
There you go, Adam. It's my chance to talk to the top trainer in the state of Kentucky, man. You knew I wouldn't miss that.
It's amazing how what a good reporter Tennessee has without having thoroughbred racing.
Yeah. Hey, okay, so you're a Kentucky guy. Is it important? Is that one of the reasons why you chose to put Brody's Cause in the Bluegrass, because of the history and it's your state and he runs good there? I mean, what went into choosing the Bluegrass for him?
That race was pretty much a no-brainer with a third in the Breeders' Cup and winning a grade one over that surface. But, early in the year we decided to make that his last prep regardless of what happened in Tampa. And we wanted the Derby to be the third start off of a little layoff and thought we'd have a fresh horse all the way through the Triple Crown if we had to be successful.
He seems to be a horse that's got a big move. Is that something that you consciously have tried to develop, or is that just Brody being Brody?
No, that's just him. We just try to let horses be what they want to be. You know, when you first start them out, you can tell some of them are precocious and they want to come away from their running, but Brody's a big old horse, a big long striding colt, but when he accelerates, like he did in the Futurity and like he did in the Breeders' Cup, I mean, he covers a lot of ground and makes up a lot of links quickly.
The big field, is that good as far as building block for him for getting ready for Churchill, or is that not anything you really think about?
Well, if he's successful and go on ahead and win it, I'll say it was a great thing. But going into it, I just soon seen 7 or 8, but there's a lot of opportunity for problems. Like I said, with Cherry Wine, I got two horses in the same race that are both going to be trying to do the same thing, coming behind him. So a lot of opportunity to get in trouble in a 14-horse field.
Dale, I'm sure you'll have him right. I appreciate your time, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, Dan. See you there.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jenny Reese, Horse Racing Radio Network. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale, you said Brody's Cause has been training like a monster. There's only 2 preps for the Kentucky Derby. Do you have concerns that he didn't do enough in the Tampa Bay Derby to get what you want to get out of him going to the next race?
That's not a concern. I mean, there's always a wonder. You know, you just don't know. I could not figure out a reason why he ran so poorly. So hopefully he's going to jump up and run like the old Brody and run big in the Bluegrass. I think that's enough. One thing about running over that Tampa racetrack is one of the reasons we picked it is it'll help tighten the horse up. I mean, it's a good racetrack. It's a little different than a lot of them. A lot of horses don't like it. But whatever, it's safe, and it should get him plenty fit and tight ready for the Bluegrass, and that should be enough going into the Derby. He had enough foundation as a 2-year-old with 4 starts.
Yeah. You told me the other day that if you could get a horse owned by Frank Jones for the Derby, it'd be like the highlight of your career. You've won the Breeders' Cup races, the Preakness, Dubai World Cup. Could you sort of elaborate on that? Because that's quite the statement.
Well, Frank, people might not know the relationship the 2 of us have. I mean, he was around when I was born. I was just looking at a win picture the other day in 1968 with him and my father and my mother standing there, and the jockeys holding my brother and myself on the horse. And Frank, in 50-something years of owning horses, had 2 trainers, my father and me. And, you know, he doesn't have any kids, and my father died fairly young. He's been like a father to me my whole life. And he loves horse racing. He's done so much for racing in Kentucky. If we could just get him to the Kentucky Derby, it would be great. And if we could actually get him into the inside winner's circle, That would be enough. The rest of my career would just be a cherry on top.
Does that add any pressure with making this decision on where to run them? Because you really, really want to get this horse to the Kentucky Derby?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that you can add pressure to trying to get a horse to the Derby, no matter who it is. But I don't think the pressure's anymore, but I think the victory might be a little more sweet if we could do it.
And
nobody deserves
to
go to the Derby more than Frank Jones.
Well, speaking of three owners, three very successful businessmen that live in three different cities, can you talk about how the partnership came together?
Well, you mean with the two different horses or all on the Cherry Wine?
I'm talking about Cherry Wine.
With Cherry Wine, with Frank Shoup and Frank Jones were always friends. And I tell you, the Cherry Wine's whole story of his pedigree is pretty interesting. I bought his Grand Dam off of a maiden second place finisher at 29 Bauer. She ended up being a very nice horse for us. She was third in the Oaks, and she was we bred her and pulled out Cherry Wine's mother and was raised in my backyard on my farm. And we ran her through the ring for Ron McKee, and I bought her for Frank Jones and Shoup and the Pacellas, which were all great clients of mine. We paid quite a bit of money for her. She was a solid allowance horse. We turned around and bred her on my farm into a Patty O'Prado, which I trained, and came up with Cherry Wine. He was raised in the backyard, so he's like my son almost.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dale. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ron Flatter of RSN Australia. Please go ahead.
Dale, I'm just looking over the points standings for the Derby, and Brody's Cause and Arrow Force have won points preps, and they're not in. Tom's Ready and Majesto only have maiden wins, and they are. Do you have a problem with that system?
Well, good day, mate. But, yes, I don't like the system. I have no problem with the old system, the graded stakes. I didn't see a problem with that. I never saw a horse that didn't get in that belonged. The only one I think even came close was Rock Art 10. I think it was just a matter of Churchill wanting to develop a system that gave him more power and control over everybody else's races.
I mean, we could parlay that into the fact that the Illinois Derby's not included. I mean, would you want to see them back in the mix as far as being able to qualify, and also that prep for the Tampa Bay Derby that comes right before that down in Tampa?
Yeah, Sam Houston. If it wasn't Sam Houston's Derby as a weapon, is there any way that those two races don't belong to have? Shouldn't have points with both of them producing very successful Derby runners. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But that's Churchill for it.
Finally, could
track,
you clarify the context of your interview with the South China Morning Post? I know you addressed some of it, but what were you misquoted or taken out of context? What was the deal there?
Well, very much misquoted and taken out of context. I never criticized American racing in any way, never would. When the guy asked me about would I go? I said, sure, I'd go. But people have to realize there's only 12 spots, and it's like being nominated for the Supreme Court. It's that big a deal. They make a lot of money. And it never happened. It was such a hypothetical question. Then when he comes back and asks me, what about the tighter medication policy? I said, I would like that. I said, it'd be a challenge to my horsemanship to try something new at this stage of my life. And that was the end of the conversation. And then the firestorm that started over here was ridiculous. Anybody who knows me and followed me or reported on me knows those weren't my words and they know how I feel about American racing. Maybe I'd get over to Hong Kong and convince them they needed Lasix over there.
Very good. All right. Thanks, Dale. Good luck.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press *1 at this time. The next question comes from Tim Wilkin of Albany Times Union. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale, I just got on a little late. Could you tell me what is going to go into your decision if Cherry Wine stays in Kentucky or goes to New York?
First of all, I'm going to narc on you and tell everybody. Tim called me earlier today to get a little pre-interview before the interview. And you already know the answer to that question because you asked me about it 2 hours ago.
I wanted to ask it again.
The draw went well for us, Tim. You know, we drew a 3-hole. That was one of the big concerns. If we drove the 14-hole, we'd probably be heading to New York already. But we're drawing to such a good post position, and they will. I don't know that I'll go ahead and enter now in the wood, but I'll definitely monitor and see how the wood's shaping up and if we need to enter or not.
How would you compare these two horses?
Well, Brody's a lot more accomplished. I mean, he's like I told you earlier, he's a prototype Derby horse, and he does every, you know, he's already won a grade one. He's already got enough points, I think, that'll get him in. So and he loves Keeneland. He's already proven that. So it's a no-brainer where he needs to make his last prep. And Cherry Wine is a horse that's just really rounding into form. He had two great races back-to-back, his maiden win and his Gulfstream Allowance. And then the Rebel, I'll tell you, is sneaky good. Everybody should go back and watch it if you aren't confident enough in him and see how well he actually ran in a 14-horse field from the 13-hole. Got bumped around, split horses, was running at the end, and galloped out strong. So they're a little bit different, but the running styles are basically the same.
Have you been monitoring all the other Derby preps yourself, watching them?
I don't pay a lot of attention to other people's horses. I try to just train my mind and focus on what's going on with mine. And now when it comes down to where we're going to go with one of these horses, I'm going to handicap both races very well and see which one makes the most sense. But a lot of it has to do more with field size than it does with actually counting the race. Because there are, you know, both grade one, all grade ones are going to have a lot of talent in them.
Right. Great, Dale. Thanks.
All right, Taylor. You can call anytime.
All right.
Thank you. The next question comes from Pia Catton of Wall Street Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dale. I wonder if you could talk about the Albas a little bit. When did you start working with them? How did you meet them, and how many horses do you have with them?
Well, they were Albas were part of the original Donegal group. They're from Des Moines, Iowa, and Dennis is one of the most successful businessmen in the country. He started a fertilizer business with, I think, a couple thousand dollars. It's worth billions of dollars today, and when he owned part of Patio Prado, and he had a horse or two beforehand, but that's how I got to know him, and he decided just to buy his own horses, and I think we've got five in training right now, and about eight yearlings this year that are being broken in Florida, or eight or ten that are being broken there, and he's got this horse and Unbridled Outlaw that are both nice horses on the Derby trail.
Great, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question comes from Lynn Schneerson of Freelance Writer. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dale. It's Lynn Schneerson. How are you?
Good.
Also, too, had jumped on a few minutes late, so I'm just curious if Unbridled Outlaw is still on the Arkansas Derby trail.
Yes, he'll run in. As long as he works well Saturday, he'll run in Arkansas Derby. And he ran – that last race he ran in the Rebel was – I think he ran a quarter of a point slower than the Rebel winner. And if he goes back and improves at all, he'll run big in the Arkansas Derby and maybe buy himself a ticket to the Kentucky Derby. He's a good horse.
Yeah, he looked really good that day. I mean, you know, I thought that race was particularly strong the way he finished up.
Yeah, he did. And, I didn't want to – ideally, I wouldn't have run him against three enough, but I wanted to get a race over the track and would have run that time. And I was proud of the way he ran. He got beat by the older horse. It could be anything, too, and they were both drawn away from the field.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tom Gika of Horse Race Insider. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dale. I know you were there last Saturday. What was your impression of the Florida Derby, and what does it do to the big picture for the Kentucky Derby?
Well, I think it solidifies our favorite going into it. And an unbeaten two-year-old champion going to the Kentucky Derby has been since 1977 since that happened. It worked out pretty well for him. I don't think that Doug's horse gets all the credit he deserves, but he's a darn good horse. Regardless of what happens the rest of his career, he's been a hell of a horse.
And do you think Mohamed, that race was just a toss, or is he if it was yours, what would you be doing now to find out what went wrong?
I'm not going to train another man's horse, but I know that he's in good hands, and they'll figure it out. I mean, he didn't have the best trips, and my horse followed him a little bit, carried him wide the first turn after some went out of the gate and grabbed him a quarter. But, you know, that you see a lot of horses with old clunker, and they come back and bounce back, and they run big. And Karen will have him ready come Derby Day.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. We'll turn the call back to Mr. Mulvihill.
All right, Dale, we pretty well covered the colts, so before we let you go, I just wanted to ask about Go Maggie Go, how she came back from the Gulfstream Oaks, and also just how she fits into this three-year-old filly division that's got so much talent right now.
Yeah, Maggie's a nice horse. I told somebody that in the paper it might be a bad year to have a good three-year-old filly. But it's good. It's a good, strong bunch of fillies, and it'd be interesting. The Oaks, you know, the Oaks is the local people's derby day, really, because most of the locals come out Friday and let the tourists come on Saturday. So it'd be a big deal for me to run that day and run big and if we could have an Oaks winner. But I tell you what, this is a good group of three-year-old fillies.
But yours could potentially be right up there with them. I mean, how impressive was it to go from a maiden to winning the Gulfstream Oaks?
That was impressive, and it was, you know, it was done on a short time. But it's going to take a bigger jump step up and run with Songbird. And like I said before, I believe the connection of Songbird should really consider sending me to Derby and get some points for the Kentucky Derby and leave us alone if they open.
Exactly. Well, Dale,
yeah,
thank you so much for...
I wouldn't try Karen's horse, but I'll help Jerry a little bit.
Right. Well, Songbird is one that definitely doesn't need any help right now. But, Dale, thank you so much for all this information today, and best of luck this weekend.
Thanks. Always fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. Dale Romans, he's got two this weekend running in Road to the Derby preps, as well as Unbridled Outlaw the following weekend pointing to the Arkansas Derby. Lots of great stuff on Frank Jones and Cherry Wine's background. We always appreciate Dale's insight. Now we're going to check with another horseman who's got a busy weekend ahead of him, and that's Chad Brown. Chad's the second leading trainer in North America by earnings in each of the last 2 years. He's developed one of the most successful operations in racing. And if you've seen his success in the Breeders' Cup the last 2 years and watching him win 28 grade ones since 2011, you pretty much had to figure that it was only a matter of time until he became a major player on the Triple Crown scene as well. Now he's here with three starters in Derby preps this weekend, led by the Gotham winner Shagoff heading the Wood Memorial. He also has the Jerome winner Flexibility in there. And back here in Lexington, he'll try the maiden winner My Man Sam in the Bluegrass. So now let's bring in Chad Brown. Chad, it's Jim Mulvihill of the NTRA. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I was so glad to get some time with you, especially with three horses loaded with potential this weekend to talk about. Let's start with Shagoff. He's really done nothing wrong to this point, but the horses in Florida and California tend to get most of the attention. So just your opinion on between, say, his pedigree, the way he's performed, why isn't Shagoff, like, in the top three on everybody's Derby contender list?
I think the main reason is his speed figures haven't been super impressive or really fast. But the horse hasn't done anything wrong. I mean, he's undefeated. He's a big, beautiful, well-bred horse. And, you know, he's proven to have a tremendous amount of stamina. I think everyone agrees. It looks like longer the better will be better for him. He's never run shorter than a mile.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it comes down to speed figures, and, you know, the faster horses are going to garner most of the attention.
Very good. And your two Wood contenders here, looking at the PPs, they had identical workouts on April 2nd. So did they work together that morning?
They did. Their final workout, Flexibility worked with Shagoff. They went an easy half a mile together, and both horses breezed very well.
And what are you able to find out when you put your top 2 3-year-olds together in company? What can you see when they go head-to-head like that?
Well, at this point, it's just maintenance for those two horses. I'm just looking at how they're moving mechanically and from a soundness standpoint. They weren't asked one to beat the other one. They were instructed to stay together, which they did. They were both capable of doing that easily. And you know, at this point, it's just maintenance for those horses.
Very good. Well, Chad, hang on the line for a second, and I'm going to ask our operator, Michelle, to check with the folks from the media on the line and see if they have questions for you.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our first question comes from Tim Wilkin of Albany Times Union. Please go ahead.
Hey, Chad. It's no secret of the success you have had in the game. Not as much, though, with the three-year-olds. How exciting is it for you to have two, possibly three horses that could be on target to run the first Saturday in May?
Well, it's very exciting. It's definitely an area we want to become a major player in. I think it's just a matter of time if we're, me and my staff's given the opportunity to work with these young dirt horses that we'll be able to get them to these Triple Crown races. And I think we're seeing that now. These are three very capable horses if they perform well in their prep races to show up on the first Saturday of May and run very well.
Is it, I mean, ideally it's not something you probably want to do is run them against each other. Is it a difficult decision when you put two of them in the same race as the caliber of the Wood Memorial?
It is. Good question. It's not ideal, but when you get right down close to the Derby, or even close to your target race, even the Breeders' Cup race, we've had this issue before where there's only so many suitable prep races for certain groups of horses, particularly in a regional situation where I don't want to be shipping too far the last race before their target race. So it really takes out of play the races that are available to you if you're only interested in shipping so far to get to these races. So oftentimes we'll have to run these horses against each other, and all we can do is, as a staff, is prepare them the best we can and enter them, and hopefully the races run fairly and the horses run to the best of their ability.
In the in Shigoff's case, obviously he's a horse that I would assume is still learning the game. Is he still got a lot of room to grow?
I believe so. He's already made a lot of progress from when he broke his maiden last year until now, both mentally and physically. And I do see a lot of room for further improvement. He's an exciting horse, and like I said earlier, he hasn't done anything wrong yet. So hopefully he continues to develop.
Thanks, Chad. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tom Padula of America's Best Racing. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Chad. Do you feel pressure personally to get horses to the Derby and maybe especially a horse of the breeding and quality of Shigoff?
No. Luckily, I train for a wonderful group of clients, including Shadwell, that I don't have any clients that when they handed me a horse, particularly a young, well-bred dirt prospect, and said, hey, you're expected to get to the Derby, you know, it's nice. It's something that if the horse puts us in that direction, I'm going to give him every chance to get there. But I'm more about the entire career of the horse. And if the opportunity presents itself, like I said, to hit these prep races and get to the Derby, it's a race me and my staff would love to win, and a lot of my clients would love to win. And we're going to try to get there, but not at any cost for the horses. We're looking at the long term here, not only all the other great three-year-old races the rest of the year, but the entire career of the horse. And we have a lot of older horses in our barn that are racing at a top level, and it's part of the whole program. So, no, I don't feel any pressure.
Okay, and then just as a follow-up, if I might ask you about flexibility, you backed off a bit. Could you just talk about that?
Yeah, that horse, we always planned on giving him that break that you see in between the withers and the wood. It was always the plan. When we committed to leaving the horse in the New York division for the winter, those are all the races that we targeted with that horse. Unfortunately, it looks like the withers was just one race too many with not enough spacing where the horse reacted a bit and needed a little bit of time. Even if he had won that race, he was still going to have the same break and use the wood as his first race off a mini break and hopefully get into the Derby with the Derby as second race off a short layoff.
Do you see signs that he is rebounding?
I do. His energy level is terrific. I thought enough of him this last week to put him in company with Chagoff, albeit it was just a maintenance drill. But he stayed against Chagoff in hand. They look like mirror images going by. So I have to say that's a great sign that the horse is fully rebounded and his energy level is terrific. He'll have his work cut out for him. Both horses will, because the wood will be both their toughest races to date. But I'm real happy with the way flexibility is coming into the race.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Chad, how are we doing today, man?
Good, sir. How are you?
Quite well, thank you. Okay, let's talk about my man, Sam. Big step up for him when you're talking about Grade 1 Bluegrass. Obviously, you think he's ready?
I do. This horse is training terrific. He's been a late bloomer, but as soon as we got this horse around two turns, his two-turn races have been terrific. He's running fast on numbers, and he acts like a horse that has more room to improve. I'm obviously very disappointed with the post-position draw just happened a couple hours ago, and he drew the 14 hole. That's very disappointing. He's going to have his work cut out for him there. So, but he's an exciting horse, and I don't think added distance will be a problem for him.
Thank you. The next question comes from David Grenning of Daily Racing Form. Please go ahead.
Hey, Chad, just how confident are you with Flexibility's ability to get a mile and an eighth? What did he show you in the Remsen, and what does he need to show you Saturday to move on?
Good question. I thought his race in the Remsen and mile and eighth against Mohamed was very good, and lost a little bit of ground in the race and still fought on bravely. That was a big decision in running in the wood for this horse. He ran so well on the outer track at Aqueduct. I didn't feel it made much sense to take him on the road, having that really solid performance in the Remsen under his belt already. I feel confident he can get a mile and eighth.
And also, he had been, I believe, training with Majestic Affair
yes.
for the him and just your thoughts on the Carter with that horse.
Majestic Affair seems to be coming on Carter in good shape. Had a little bit of a break since his race in the DeFrancis. He seems to be in great form right now. Looks like a real solid race. But I think Majestic Affair is really peaking right now in terms of I've never seen this horse. I mean, he's matured. He's a different horse than when he was younger. I see a higher quality animal in front of me now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question comes from Amy Zimmerman of NBC Sports. Please go ahead.
Hey, Chad. I was just curious, like, given your concern about Chagoff's quirkiness, if he gets past the test in the wood, how confident or concerned are you about him surviving the circus that can be Kentucky Derby Day?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, our plan is if he's able to continue on and run good in the wood and come out of there healthy, that we'll get him to Churchill early, and I'll have two works over the track, and I'll have plenty of schooling. So I'm optimistic with the progress he's made, particularly in the last 30 days with little things about him and me and my staff and the gate crew and the vanning companies, all working with this horse to spend time with him, schooling him. He's made great progress. So he's a smart horse. I would anticipate him schooling and adapting well to Churchill with no guarantees.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ed McNamara of Newsday. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chad.
your mentor was the great Bobby Frankel, and I was just wondering, what were the most important things that you learned from your time working for him?
Wow, there's so many things I learned from him. Patience, be patient with the horses. He's also terrific at making adjustments. You know, when you're training horses every day, so many things can go wrong. You set a plan, and oftentimes things don't go to plan in your training sessions or the health of the horses or weather or anything. And as I observed him and worked under him, he just had a way of, he might get upset, but he could switch gears on the go and through his experience, make good adjustments. I try to do that myself. I'm still learning, getting better at it. But, patience, making adjustments, being honest with what you see on the track. He never really lied to himself. He saw something, he acknowledged it, and he tried to fix it. He didn't try to make himself believe he saw something that he didn't. And I think that was a huge part of his success, in my opinion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back to Mr. Mulvihill.
All right, Chad, I do want to talk about the filly a little bit. Lewis Bay already has a spot in the Oaks, most likely, and ran into Catherine Sophia last time. Just tell us a little bit what you're looking for this weekend in the Gazelle.
Well, we're excited to get her back around two turns. After a Demoiselle win, we plan on giving her a little break and plan to only run her one time in Florida. So she hit her mark perfect what we wanted her to do. She gets to run on the outer track of Aqueduct again, where she's already won a graded stake and stretch out in distance. I'm looking for a step forward and then hopefully go on to the Oaks, continuing to improve in her third race of the year, hopefully be her best.
Very good. Well, Chad, thanks for all the great info today, and we wish you luck this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Anytime. Chad Brown, who's going to saddle Chagoff, the likely favorite, in the wood on Saturday, as well as Flexibility. That brings us to our final guest now, and that's going to be the Hall of Fame jockey, Mike Smith. He's won a Kentucky Derby, a Preakness, two Belmont. He's the all-time leading Breeders' Cup rider with 22 wins. And, of course, he's ridden some of the great females of all time between Zenyatta, Azeri, Royal Delta, and now he's the regular rider of Songbird, who could one day be in that class. She'll be odds-on in the Santa Anita Oaks this Saturday. And also on that card, of course, he'll ride Dancing Candy, the San Felipe winner in the Santa Anita Derby. So now let's check in with Mike Smith. Mike, it's Jim Mulvihill in Lexington. You there?
Jim, how are you? Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great. We're so happy to have you on with us again. There's so much to talk about with Songbird, and I'm sure some of these questions you've already been asked a million times, but we just want to start in the most obvious place. So just tell us how good you think Songbird really is.
Well, I don't think we've gotten to see how good she is yet, to be honest with you. I mean, up to this far, I would have to say she's probably the most prominent three-year-old I've ever been on at this early age. I mean, a lot of the great mares that I was blessed to have ridden earlier in my career, you know, really didn't have the career that she had at three. A lot of them didn't get good till they were four and so mm-hmm. on. So I would say now she ranks up above them as a three-year-old anyway.
That's impressive in its own right with all the good three-year-olds you've been on, and you didn't qualify that with three-year-old filly. You're talking about three-year-old of either gender.
Yeah, I mean, she's, I would have to say, that's including the boys as well.
Yeah. Well, that is very impressive.
I just don't think I've been a three-year-old that's been so dominant like this. I've been on three-year-olds that had a good winning streak, a 5, 6, 7, 8, race winning streak, but I don't think any of them have been as dominant as she has been,
Very interesting. And you were aboard for this work yesterday where she, basically looked like it loped. She loped around there, but the final time was a bullet in 46-4. Tell us what that felt like.
About like it looked, I mean, I was out in about, I would say, the 6-7 path, just trying to get her to relax, which she was, and just cruised around there, a nice happy half, just to pump a little air in her. And I mean, she just did that with tremendous ease. I mean, as a matter of fact, I couldn't believe it when I came back and they told me the number. I was like, she'll make a guy who think he has a clock in his head not know what time it is at all.
Well, that's saying something from you, Mike. So let me just turn it over to the media and see what they've got for you. Michelle?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone at this time. Our first question comes from Art Wilson of Southern California Newspaper Group. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Both the trainers of your two horses you're going to be running, riding Saturday, Danzig Candy and Songbird, you know, both of those horses, for you know, all their wins, they've virtually gone gate to wire. But both of the trainers have said that they didn't think that their horses needed the lead, that if somebody went out there crazy with fractions, that they could lay off and kind of set off the pace. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, we do it in the mornings quite a bit, actually. Most of the time when they do work with the company, every time it's usually starting out about 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 lengths behind their company, which we've done with both, and it's pretty much the same outcome. It's not that they need the lead. You know, I've been waiting that long for someone to get in front of Songbird, to be honest with you, but she's just, you know, I help her out of there just a little bit, and she's just got that natural high cruising speed that it puts her where it puts her, and that's where she's comfortable. And if someone wanted to go faster than that, they could certainly go in front of her. I don't think she would mind it. I would like to say the same about Dancing Candy, although the difference between the two is I've been putting Dancing Candy on the lead, whereas Songbird's just been taking me there. Now, in saying that, depending on where we draw with Danzig Candy, if someone was that high on being in front, I don't think it'd be a problem.
Right, and then looking at both of their PPs, it's safe to assume you haven't nearly gotten to the bottom of either one of them.
Yeah, well, I would say the last time at Danzig run, I rode him for a little ways just to get him. I certainly didn't want to be idling at the eighth pole or something, you know, waiting for more spirit to come running, because he's got such a powerful late kick that I wanted to get him, you know, really get him going forward before I, you know, put my hands down. And I would say the last 100 yards, I pretty much felt that I had the race under control and was able to, you know, to give him a little breather the last part of it.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, is there any doubt in your mind that Songbird could beat the boys?
Well, I you just don't ever know until you do it. But I don't think she'd have a problem with it, to be honest with you.
Okay, best of luck to you on Saturday, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Mikey, how we doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Danny.
Hey, on Songbird, is one of the ways that you know she's so good is because it just seems to come so easy to her?
Yeah, just everything she does is that way. I mean, so much so that even in the beginning when you first get on her, you're not really sure because it's just awful easy. It just seems like you're just kind of going around there. But you run her on a race or you put her up against a horse during the work, and what comes to her really easy seems not to the other horse. I mean, they're having to work at keeping that pace, whereas that's where she's happy and that's where she's comfortable. I can remember, I think when she, early on in her career when she won, I think it was second time out, when she won the Del Mar Oaks, running against that filly of Baffert's that was really quick filly, really good filly. And we were going halfway down the backside, and I mean, Songbird was just in a beautiful, nice, low, pricking her ears, and I looked over next to the filly next to me, and they were all, you know, I wouldn't say in distress, but they're having to, you could tell they're having to work to keep pace, you know, and that's when I knew the second time out, I said, man, this this could be something really special here.
So with her, is your job more passenger and less pilot, or is early pilot and late passenger, or what do you think?
Well, it just depends. At times I have to help her out of the gate. Early on in her career, she wanted to be a bit aggressive. We've got her now to where she's really nice and happy and comfortable. Jerry's done a great job of getting her ready for these races, and the boy that gets on her in the morning has done a really good job of, you know, teaching her to relax but yet as relaxed and as cool and calm she is in the morning, when she comes over in the afternoon, she just has that just enough edge to her where you feel confident that she's going to fire. You know, you ain't going to see her out there hanging her head or just kind of walking around. I mean, she gets a little dance to her step, and you could tell her game face is on. So I really like that part about her. She seems to turn it on just enough and not get too hot. At times in the afternoon, as you well know, a horse can, you know, it can kind of chip over the edge a little bit, get a little too warm. But so far, she's been real good at just kind of raising her game, and you know that she's alert and ready to do so.
Dancing Candy, I don't know if he maybe snuck up on some folks in the San Felipe. I guess that was his third win in a row. But did other people kind of find out maybe what you guys already knew, that this horse is kind of special?
I think so. I mean, I think so. I mean, what the difference between him and her in the morning anyway is he's just not near as flashy as she is. He's not into his works near as much. He's more laid back, kind of wanting to play around a little bit and hang on a horse and not really leave his company at times. But in the afternoon, he's totally different. I mean, he's just dominated in the afternoon. So as long as he keeps doing that in the afternoon, I ain't going to worry about that morning too much. But, I mean, don't go out there in the morning and watch him work and think you're going to see a Derby winner. You probably wouldn't impress you a whole lot, to be honest with you. But when he gets over there in the afternoon, I mean, it's a total different game, and I like that. He's pretty easy on himself in the morning.
Mike, I appreciate your time, man. I certainly wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question comes from Tim Wilkin of Albany Times Union. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mike, I'm sure you've been asked this question more than once, so I'm going to ask it again. Does part of you wish that Songbird was running against the boys in the Triple Crown races?
You know, you would think I would probably say yes. You know, you would think, but I'm just so happy to be a part of her. Wherever she runs, as long as I'm on her, I'm pretty happy, and I'm content with it. I think there might be a time down the road, maybe, you know, we'll try older horses, or they'd like to try older horses with her, and maybe not. There's nothing wrong with beating your own gender and hopefully racking up as many wins as you can, you know, before you do face them. But as far as her ability, and do I think she can compete and beat the boys, I without a doubt.
Is she different than any of the other great fillies you've ridden? I know that's early in her career, like you mentioned before, but does she do anything differently that the others might not have done, even though that sounds crazy to say?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, to be honest with you. I'd say the difference between her and the others is how early she's doing it. Does that mean she'll continue to grow and get even better? That's even scary to even think about, to be honest with you. But I just haven't been on one that's been this smart and this ready to run at such a young age. I mean, she knows what she's doing. I mean, you walk her out there right now, and I mean, she knows the difference between the morning and the afternoon, when she's supposed to turn it on, when she's not. I mean, she's got things figured out at a very young age, and that's kind of the difference between them, where a lot of them didn't start getting really smart about running, even though they'd win a race or something, until later on in the 3-year-old year or 4-year-old year, and you know they became who they were. But she does things at a young age that is scary.
Thanks, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tom Giga of Horse Race Insider. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, I'm sorry. This might be a variation of what you've been asked before, but I read that the owners of Songbird didn't want to run it. They said they didn't want to run in the Santa Anita Derby because if they won that, they'd have to run in the Kentucky Derby, and if they won that, they'd be obligated to go to the Preakness and maybe to the Belmont. If she comes out of the – has there been any discussion that if she comes out of the Oaks good, that the Preakness would be an option like was with Rachel Alexander?
You know, I honestly haven't heard that. I haven't talked to them about that. You know, right now we're just going race by race, and we're all excited about this one coming up. And I haven't talked to Mr. Porter or any of them about what their plans are after the Oaks. So hopefully we can get there and compete very well there, and then worry about stuff like that, I guess, down the road.
All right, and then one other question. Has there ever been a moment when she was seriously challenged? I know that the race is all wound up easy, but was there any time? You talked about the race against the Baffert filly when you really knew you had something. Has there been any other time where you thought, wow, I got to do something here?
No, there hasn't. That's what's, that's what's scary about it. I mean, there hadn't been a place. I mean, there's been a time or two I've let her run, but it's basically just asking her to pick it up, and she picks it up, and then that's all I've had to do. I haven't ever had to continue to ask her for more or think, wow, is somebody going to come late and get us? I mean, she's literally just towing me around there when I ask her to pick it up. I mean, it's what's so crazy about how good she is right now is that I've honestly, these are a lot of races that are grade one. I mean, people were saying, well, you beat the same filly over and over again a few times, you know, with the Doug O'Neill filly, and then she goes down to New Orleans and she wins the Oaks by five. I mean, I think that kind of even said a lot for her as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back to Mr. Mulvihill.
All right, Mike, before we wrap up, I'd just like you to you know, try if you could to put this filly into a larger context in the sense that, you know, here's a rider who has seemingly done it all and won everything you can win. What's it like at this point in your career to come across a filly that's doing things that you haven't experienced before as far as being a three-year-old filly that you've never felt this kind of intelligence from and flashiness? Just how exciting is it for you at this point in your career?
You know, I mean, well, just to kind of put it into words that you could think about, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, but I thought this before. Oh, it's been several times. I've been so blessed, man, to have ridden so many great fillies. And when one's over with, I thought when Azari retired, I thought, God, I'll never see another Azari, you know. And then when Zenyatta came around, God, you'd never see something like her again, which, you know, I'm not putting her in that spot yet. But here comes a filly like this. It just jumps up and does everything at two and three so far that with such dominance, it's pretty incredible, man. I just pinch myself that I get to be the guy that gets to sit on top of them. I don't know what it is, but I've been very blessed to have ridden some great, great fillies, and hopefully we'll continue to do well and keep it going and see how far we can do it, you know.
Very good. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it.
I got close to undefeated once before, you know, just getting beat that last time with Zenyatta. It'd be nice to see what this mare goes on and does, you know.
Well, you got six down, so you're part of the way there.
she's got a ways to go now to get to Zenyatta. Don't get me wrong, but she's got quite a bit to do. But I think that if anyone can do it, she certainly has the ability and the mind to maybe pull something like that off.
Terrific. Well, Mike, it's such a joy to watch her run and also to see you on top of her. So best of luck on Saturday and not just with Songbird, but Dancing Candy as well. And we'll look forward to talking to you more down the road.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Mike Smith, the Hall of Fame rider, who's got two big chances on Saturday with Songbird, Dancing Candy, and I'm sure we'll be seeing him here in Kentucky 5 weeks after that. That wraps up today's call. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Not only Mike, but also Dale Romans and Chad Brown. Just a great lineup today. Lots of great information from some great talkers. And we appreciate all of you coming on and asking questions as well, keeping the conversation going. There'll be an audio file of this call on our website tomorrow, as well as a transcript. And as always, let me know, or Joan Lawrence, if there's anything we can do for you. We'll be back next week with an Arkansas Derby preview. And then after that, we'll take a couple weeks off and prepare for the Triple Crown. Hope to see you back here next Tuesday. And now I'll send it back to Michelle to wrap it up.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown conference call. You may now disconnect your line, and thank you for your participation.